It is easy to throw stones or be a critic from the outside. It is harder to be in their arena and make difficult decisions.
Airstrikes and airlifts continue in Kabul. It's Monday, August 30th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Follow us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Afghan rescue mission, new humanitarian obstacles in Afghanistan, tales of Taliban human rights abuses, China draws Afghan parallels with Taiwan, Afghans arrive in the U.S. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The United States conducted an airstrike Sunday against a vehicle that posed a threat to the Kabul airport following U.S. warnings of an imminent attack in the area. CENTCOM spokesperson Captain Bill Urban said U.S. military forces conducted a self-defense unmanned over-the-horizon airstrike on a vehicle in Kabul, eliminating an imminent ISIS-K threat to the Hamid Karzai International Airport. He added, "We are confident we successfully hit the target. Significant secondary explosions from the vehicle indicated the presence of a substantial amount of explosive material." ISIS-K had claimed responsibility for a suicide attack outside the airport that killed at least 170 Afghans and 13 U.S. service members last Thursday. A U.S. airstrike last Friday killed two members of the terror group. The U.S. Embassy in Kabul had urged U.S. citizens to leave the vicinity of the airport, citing a specific and credible threat. U.S. President Joe Biden Saturday said another attack was likely within the next 24 to 36 hours. Warnings of additional attacks come as the U.S. and its allies wind down an evacuation of their citizens and Afghans fleeing the Taliban. The White House says that since August 14th, the U.S. has evacuated or helped to evacuate more than 114,000 people. As evacuations from Afghanistan continue ahead of tomorrow's August 31st departure deadline, the U.S. State Department vows to continue to help Americans who want to leave, even after Tuesday's deadline. VOA's Laurel Bowman has our story.
Planes flew in and out of Afghanistan, evacuating those who wished to leave following the Taliban's takeover earlier this month. On Thursday, a suicide bombing killed more than 100 people, including 13 U.S. service members, an offshoot of the Islamic State extremist group known as ISIS-K, claimed responsibility for the attack. In Washington, the White House is facing fire for what the president's critics are calling a botched exit strategy, with many left behind.
We had a promise that we would get them out. How can they trust America anymore if we violate our trust and our promises?
But the White House is standing firm.
It is easy to throw stones or be a critic from the outside. It is harder to be in their arena and make difficult decisions.
But analysts who've studied the region for years say the events unfolding today have been a long time in the making.
Let's be clear. This is an American-made disaster that crosses four administrations, and it also crosses the multiple branches of government. Implicated in this are failings from the White House, from the Bush administration to Obama to Trump and presently to Biden. There is plenty of blame to go around.
For days, Afghans and others wishing to leave the country have massed at the gates of the Hamid Karzai International Airport and the surrounding area. U.S. officials acknowledged Friday that not everyone who deserves safe passage will get through. The U.S. State Department says its efforts to get people with special status out will continue beyond next Tuesday's deadline.
Our military operation will come to an end by August 31st. What does not have an expiration date is our commitment to any American who, for whatever reason, decides not to take us up on the offer of repatriation now, but who may come to us in days, weeks, months, or years to say, I want help.
The State Department isn't saying whether there will be formal diplomatic relations with the Taliban in the future, and the White House has vowed retaliation for Thursday's attack while urging the public to focus on what's been one of the biggest air evacuations in history, with more than 100,000 people leaving Afghanistan since mid-August. Laurel Bowman, VOA News, Washington.
Follow this rapidly developing story by following us on Twitter at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook at VOA Asia and at the voanews.com website. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on voanews.com. Taliban close to formation of cabinet, announcement of new government. Afghans see more checkpoints as Taliban widen airport security cordon. Australia approves Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine for children over 12. A survey says most Americans support defending Taiwan if China invades. Afghan Paralympians extremely emotional after Tokyo arrival. Expanded coverage of all these stories and so much more can be found daily at Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and of course our website. That's voanews.com. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. At kitchen tables around the United States, former military members who served in Afghanistan have been working around the clock to get their Afghan colleagues out of the country. They fear the Taliban will imprison or even kill interpreters and their families who do not make it out by August 31st. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb reports on one family that has upended its life to help.
I take it completely as a military op. It's just like it was in the field. Little sleep, little food, a lot of intelligence, you know, and a lot of waiting.
Night and day, Army veteran Lou Frazier calls in favors with one mission in mind, to get this family of 26, almost all women and children, inside Kabul's International Airport.
I'm trying to rescue a bunch of women and children that are attached to these men that I have a great fondness for that served us so well. You know, my heart breaks.
These men, we'll call them Ali and Muhammad, are former combat interpreters whom Frazier worked with in Afghanistan.
As a father, you know, all I hope to get my family to the United States.
If you all don't help me, who is help me?
Frazier helped Ali and Muhammad arrive in the U.S. in June. They planned to earn enough money for passports to get the rest of their family here. They thought they had time, but then Kabul fell.
It's made the situation extremely difficult because now you have U.S. Marines and Taliban 10 feet away from each other.
The obstacles are overwhelming. Frazier says this footage provided by a friend in Kabul Wednesday shows U.S. forces firing flash grenades to keep people away from an airport gate. Family members call terrified, they say, because the Taliban are knocking on doors looking for those who worked with Americans. And on Thursday, a deadly explosion at an airport gate. Every spare minute, Frazier and his wife update evacuation forms and check with anyone who might be able to help.
I'm just hoping and making, you know, and making sure that the pictures are clear enough, that my, you know, the coordinates are accurate enough, that everything is perfect, because I fear if I don't get this correct, then the mission won't be accomplished.
For now, they wait, hoping someone, anyone, will save them. Carla Babb, VOA News.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, it's getting harder to help those in need. Happening now in Asia, China's top court has ruled it is a violation of labor laws to have a so-called 996 work culture, meaning working 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. 6 days a week. The practice of encouraged overtime is common among Chinese tech firms. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. It's nice to have you with us today on VOA Asia. The humanitarian situation was already dire in Afghanistan before the Taliban swept into Kabul August 15th. Now it has worsened as aid workers are coping with a new operating environment. VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir reports.
Conflict, drought, and COVID-19 have created one of the worst humanitarian crises in the world, leaving more than 18 million Afghans in need of assistance. The collapse of the government and the Taliban takeover have only deepened the emergency, displacing thousands more people. Aid agencies are used to working in difficult and dangerous conditions, but new uncertainties on the ground have forced many to assess the security situation and evacuate international staff, send local staff home, and pause some or all of their services.
I think for many of us and our peer agencies, it is important that we have a right, secure environment to operate. We want to have clarity on humanitarian access space, and we really want to make sure that the international community stand with Afghanistan and Afghan people and not forget them in the time of crisis.
The Taliban have signaled that they want the United Nations and some NGOs to continue their work, but have not said whether they will impose new restrictions or conditions on them.
So everything at the moment in terms of how UNICEF works is up in the air. We have not yet had a meeting at the central level with the new de facto authority. We are having dialogue at the regional and local level with local interlocutors. So we do not have a system in place yet.
The World Food Program has been operating in the country since 1963 and currently feeds about 4 million people each month. With malnutrition rates on the rise, it is scaling up to reach 9 million monthly by November. Access has continued, but without a proper government in place, it is complicating WFP's work.
There's a political leadership in Doha. There is local leadership here. There is a leadership layer at various places. Our concern is that assurances that might be given at one level are honored by local or even higher authorities in other levels.
Logistics are vital to the efficient and regular delivery of aid, and questions remain over who will run Kabul's airport after the U.S. leaves.
A functioning airport for a landlocked country is going to be so, so critical in order to get supplies in order for, yes, you know, our international staff to be able to get in, to get out, for medevac reasons.
The World Food Program's Andrew Patterson says aid agencies fear donor funding could dry up in response to a Taliban-led government.
That means cutting off aid. We really need the humanitarian aid to keep flowing. That's how we're going to be able to stop mass famine in this country.
With millions of Afghans already food insecure, aid workers say funding cuts would be deadly. Margaret Bashir, VOA News.
Be sure to read and see more on this story by following VOA Asia on social media.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello online or on your smartphone. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news and great features.
This news from VOA Asia, Japanese public broadcaster NHK, citing a health ministry source, reported a contaminant found in a batch of Moderna's COVID-19 vaccine delivered to Japan is believed to be a metallic particle. Use of the vaccine was suspended following the discovery. You'll find this in all the big stories on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. United Nations and private aid agencies say human rights violations have been surging in Afghanistan since Taliban militants seized control of the country. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Aid agencies say Afghanistan is at a very dangerous point. They say an increasingly brutal conflict is worsening the already serious human rights violations in the country. CEO of the Asia-Pacific Refugee Network, Najiba Wazadafost, says many people feared the resurgence of the Taliban as the U.S. and NATO withdrew troops from Afghanistan. But she says few people thought the Taliban would gain control over the country so quickly. She says it is horrifying horrifying to see the rapid escalation of human suffering and displacement under Taliban rule.
It has been quite heartbreaking, you know, especially in the past week, receiving vast amount of calls through our Afghan crisis helpline, where people have been reporting executions and beatings and clampdown on media and radio stations. They've been reporting to us about Taliban's, you know, door-to-door searches, targeted killings and looting in the capital. And again, we've been hearing about schools and hospitals and thousands of homes being attacked.
Wasadafo says she is most concerned about the voices of fear she is hearing from women. She says they talk about their fear of being killed simply because they are female. She says she fears border closures because of the pandemic, which will prevent women and girls fleeing violence and persecution from finding safety. Wasadafo is appealing to Western countries that are leaving Afghanistan to not abandon the women and girls left behind and leave them without hope and the support they need to survive their changed circumstances. The United Nations says decades of conflict compounded by a second drought in 4 years and the devastating socioeconomic impact of COVID-19 have wiped out Afghanistan's ability to survive without international support. The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs says nearly half of Afghanistan's population, about 18 million people, need humanitarian assistance. The head of OCHA's Coordination Division, Wafa Saeed Abdelatif, says at least a third of the population does not have enough to eat and is suffering from acute hunger.
We also estimate that half the children under 5 are acutely malnourished. And when a child is malnourished, this means also not access to enough food, to health, to water, to hygiene, to sanitation, and also malnutrition have a severe and irreversible impact on children. So this is something that we cannot let continue.
This year's United Nations humanitarian appeal for $1.3 billion has received just $500 million, leaving a funding gap of $800 million. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Making headlines in Asia, a Thai police chief surrendered to police after a manhunt related to accusations he tortured and suffocated a drug suspect to death. Police raided the Bangkok mansion of a 41-year-old man nicknamed Joe Ferrari. They found 13 luxury cars, according to local media. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, the Chinese government is drawing parallels between Afghanistan and Taiwan, suggesting the United States is a weak and unreliable partner. Analysts say the accusation is part of China's political warfare, as VOA's Elizabeth Lee reports.
With the rapid Taliban takeover of Afghanistan and the American troop withdrawal, China's government-backed Global Times newspaper is suggesting Taiwan could suffer the same fate as Afghanistan. A newspaper editorial described the U.S. as an unreliable partner. But the U.S. considers the Taiwan Strait to be key to the security and stability of the Indo-Pacific region.
We urge Beijing, as we have before, to cease its military, diplomatic, economic pressure against Taiwan, and instead to engage in meaningful dialogue.
On Twitter, Taiwan's Minister of Foreign Affairs, Joseph Wu, accused China of emulating the Taliban. He wrote, "We have the will and means to defend ourselves." Analysts say China's aim is to isolate Taiwan.
I think that that article needs to be understood as for what it is, which is a piece of political warfare.
Without an American presence in Afghanistan, the U.S. may be able to focus more on Taiwan and the Indo-Pacific region, says political scientist Scott Harold.
And the United States' explanation for why it was withdrawing from Afghanistan was so as to focus on countering China, Russia, and other malign great power actors, and not continuing to try to sustain a government that, unfortunately, we saw was not able to survive much beyond the period when the United States withdrew its very active support.
Analysts say the U.S. is not the only country that has an interest in security in the region. China's control of Taiwan would have serious implications for U.S. allies in the region, says analyst Michael Shoebridge.
Being in the possession of the Chinese would be a huge power projection platform for them, way beyond those tiny little bases they built in the South China Sea. and it would have a more profound power projection effect for them as a result, and it would cut right into the U.S. alliance relationships with Japan and Korea. So it's a fundamental security issue for the Indo-Pacific and for Australia as a result.
Taiwan is not only the key to the first island chain and the security of America's allies and partners in the Philippines, Japan, and South Korea, as well as Australia, but it's also the key to the global supply chain of semiconductors and other advanced technologies.
With news of how Beijing represses the country's Uyghur Muslim minority and continuing questions about COVID-19's origins, analysts say there is also more public support in the U.S. to defend Taiwan against China than to remain in Afghanistan.
The trends that we see in the populace as a whole are substantially greater in the elite and decision-making circles. I think China is more widely recognized as a threat there, and I think Taiwan's importance has only grown over the last 4 or 5 years from an already fairly strong base.
China considers Taiwan a renegade province and a domestic matter. Beijing, through the editorial, encourages Taiwan to seek peace with China politically. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Washington.
Two Afghan-American families who were in Afghanistan when the United States-backed government fell last week are talking about their harrowing journey from the Kabul airport back to America. VOA Afghan service reporter Mohammed Ahmadi visited the families and has this report narrated by Sabaha Khan.
Images of mayhem, bomb explosions, and people trying to get into airport gates have made headlines around the world. And passengers who boarded planes in Kabul days ago are now arriving at Dulles Airport in Washington. Abdul served as an interpreter for the U.S. military and is a U.S. green card holder. He says family was not let into the airport with him.
All my family is back over there. I am so worried about them. I try to bring them in, but the security forces, they didn't let them.
As they arrive, many describe horrifying scenes of gunfire and people being crushed at the airport. Arif is concerned about his two brothers-in-law, both of whom held high-ranking government positions.
Like two of my brother-in-laws, they work in the government, previous government, in high rankings, and they tried even yesterday to get into the airport, but nobody allowed them to. And we know, like, these guys the Taliban will start. And they already have started going to homes of people that were part of the government, the high ranking, especially important people, and choosing them one by one. And whatever they do, I've heard some of them, they already, you know, they're gone. There's no news about them. So there's a big fear that these guys are in real danger.
Arif hopes that the United States will be able to evacuate all the people who are in danger in Afghanistan. He claims that since the Taliban took control of the cities, particularly Kabul, women are rarely seen outside.
That itself is evidence that people, like, women are in a great fear, that they cannot come outside, they cannot work, they cannot go to schools. Even though Taliban are giving these statements of, okay, girls and guys or those people that were in the previous government, they can go to the work or to the college and stuff. But that's not the reality, because in reality, they don't want them in that way.
Passengers arriving at Dulles International Airport in Northern Virginia say they are tired and sleep-deprived. Some say they were provided only snacks for the last 2 days in Qatar, but they remain grateful for the quick preparations made by the U.S. military. However, there is a seething resentment among the passengers about the Afghan government's downfall.
All these people, they work for the coalition forces with the U.S. forces for like past 20 years. And finally, a person that weighed 5 kilograms, our president, he sold out everyone overnight. And people weren't shocked. And we appreciate Joe Biden, President Joe Biden, that he's helping everyone.
Almost all of the people who are arriving here have two things in common: fear for those who are left behind and relief that they are safe now. Sabasha Khan, VOA News, Washington.
That's all the time we have for today's program. Thank you for joining us on VOA Asia. Continue online at Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Just look us up under our name, VOA Asia. We also thank our team that brings you this program, Service Chief Diane Gao, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, Amy Hybels, and Chris Cascao. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead. Be safe. Be well.